Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 711. It's not as ephemeral as 911, but it's 711. It's 7-11. Go get a Coke. Or no caffeine. Go and get whatever you want to. Me personally, I'm kind of a non-carbonated guy, so I tend to go for the lemonade whenever I can. Water's a crazy idea. Maybe you should give it a try. Well, this episode is dedicated to the concept of NPC, the non-player character. Let me give you a little bit of background. I got into computers in about 1979. I was 12 years old, and I finally got to interface with a real live geek, man. I don't think I was even really into geekiness, it's not really something you get into, it's just something you kind of discover about yourself, but kind of like Zenith and everything else. Ran into my first guy who had built a computer, and I mean it was homemade case. It's an old S100 CPM based computer. It's what people did. Anyway, it took me a few years till I got my own, but my own CPM computer. I ultimately bought a TI-99 Flash 4 computer, which introduced me to a wonderful thing called Text Adventures. I loved Text Adventures as a teenager. I had a lot of them. And I would load it up on my TI-99 Flash 4 with the crappy 40 by 16, maybe it was 40 by 25, I don't think so, I think it was 40 by 16, screen, and I played Pirates Island, or something like that. Anyway, I played adventures, and I got a kick out, just the intellectual puzzles of trying to figure out what you could pull together, bring together, and build to try to solve some problem. It's all done through text. Now, in the very beginning, you would go in this adventure and you basically ran it by typing in commands. Nobody ever called it kind of an avatar, although that's what they kind of call it now, kind of your computerized persona. You would type in commands to kind of the programmed version of yourself to tell it what to do. You know, go north, you go N-W-E-S, give it directions. Or you could say, walk, go door. It's usually two-word commands on the really early ones that I was into. The really basic, easy ones. And you would move around in this kind of synthetic world. That makes it sound a lot bigger than it was. It was just, it was mostly organized as rooms or locations. You would pick up and manipulate objects. And sometimes you would have to fight something or on the adventure games I got onto, there was never any fighting. It was always about just kind of working through a situation, a puzzle, maybe. So, anyway, you would have to interact sometimes with things that were told you were people. There's a pirate here. So you would go up to the pirate, and you would talk to the pirate in little two-word phrases or something like that, and they would respond to you in a very programmed, stinted way. And if you gave the right, command, the right sequence of commands, they would give you something, And the more sophisticated these text adventures got, the more sophisticated these little these little computer-generated people became. You could all actually carry on something of a conversation with them, although it was still stilted. You know, it was still, you know, it was definitely programmed. You weren't talking to a person, you know. You were talking to the computer that just, you know, said that it was a person. You know, there's this person. And you would go and you'd have a conversation, or you would go and you would take something out of their pocket, or something like that. You would ask for something and they would give it, but you have to ask the right way. Well, with time, that was my experience with text adventuring, because honestly, I got busy after that and I really didn't have time. I don't have time to play games much anymore. You know, I do other things instead. But anyway, as time has passed, the whole idea of the text adventure kind of graduated up to graphical things. But the whole concept of having the computer generate some kind of artificial intelligence that you had to interact with, and the fact that with bigger processor power, with bigger memory, with bigger computational power, would come better artificial intelligence. The point to where sometimes, you know, it's hard to tell if you're talking to a person or to a computer program. You used to do that as a very... I would occasionally get onto IRC, the Internet Relay Chat protocol, and you'd get on there and you would talk to people. Now, sometimes they would put what was called an IRC bot, which is a computer program actually kind of running on the server that basically took the place of a person. You know, in an IRC, you had to have somebody sitting in your room, your little channel. Well, sometimes they call them channels. Sometimes you can call them rooms, too. It kind of depends on how you look at it. You'd have to have something sitting there holding that room open, or else once the last person left, it would just fall off. So you would normally put a bot in there, and that bot usually wouldn't do anything but give a couple of canned responses. But every once in a while, some guys would really work on their bots and make them, you know, pretty interactive. You could get a lot of information from that bot. You know, now you might not go in so far as to try to make it so that it could carry on a human-like conversation, but you would certainly give it enough features so that you would give it word commands, you know, asking for information, statistics about that room, and it would give it up to you. Over time, this has gotten sophisticated to the point to where they gave it a whole new term because they felt like that these things had kind of come to the point to where they would call it a character. It's a character in this story you're going through. Most adventures were just kind of a scripted story. If you remember, at one time it was kind of cool to write books that had multiple endings, or went off in many directions. And so you would be reading along, you would come to a fork in the story, and it would say, if you want to do this, turn to page 98. If you want to do that, turn to page 275. And you would do that, and you could follow your way through. It was kind of a multiple book. You could have several different storylines going on in one book. And just depending on what choices you made, you know, it would take you somewhere. You know, it would take you to a different conclusion. Now, it couldn't be very sophisticated because books are pretty linear by their nature. You can jump that storyline along, but it's really hard for it to recombine in any kind of interesting way. That's where computers were found to be superior to books. So anyway, so came up with the whole concept of the non-player character. There's no human behind that character running what it does. When you think of the massive multiplayer kind of games that there are now, like EverQuest, I guess Second Life is kind of like that, but it's not really a game. It's more just an artificial world. You tend to put what, you know, there is no storyline tied to something like that. But it's the same kind of thing. You'll find that you run across characters that look like people, look just like the avatars of other people, but are programmed. They're run by computers. They aren't run by a actual person. And hey, that whole concept came from the very beginning text adventure, where it was just you sitting in front of a screen, and everything that you interacted with was programmed, and the computer generated it, and whatever intelligence it seemed to have, whatever it seemed to do, was part of a computer program, sometimes very simple and crude, sometimes quite elegant. Well, I started pondering, and I kind of find the whole idea intriguing. I'm not saying it's right, but Zenith people, autistics, Asperger's, ADHD, aliens, all those sorts of people, I started to make comparisons between them and non-player characters, kind of programmed people. And it's interesting in that I think it explains, a few things. I didn't find very much on the internet about this. I actually found a backwards reference to non-player character. Somebody was saying that when he was trying to interface with an autistic person, that autistic person treated him like a non-player character. You know, like something that he was, that was supposed to run according to some kind of program set. You know, that's how autistic people, that's how this normal person felt, this local, felt when he was trying to work with, interface with an autistic person. Was he felt like that autistic person was trying to treat him like a non-player character. And I said, you know why he probably does that? That's probably because that's what he is. That's how he's programmed to respond to other people. You know, he has to, in most of these text adventure games, you had to act in kind of a programmed way to get it to work. You know, people would say, oh, but it's so stilted. I would like to go get a manicure, but that's not one of my options here. You know, autistic people live in a world of somewhat reduced options because that works better for them. Well, that's what a computer does in relation to the people playing with it. It gives you somewhat of a reduced freedom of movement according to how that game is set up, what the points of the game are, that adventure, whatever it is. And so I started playing with it. Instead of thinking of along the lines of, boy, you know, these autistic people need a very structured way of being, and you go, maybe that's because they're non-player characters. I brought this up with my wife, and it really offended her, as usual. I think I brought it up before in different terms, and she, of course, said, that's not true. It can't be true. And I brought it up in the whole context of the religious context of, like, Mormons, for instance. I don't think Christians really have any vocabulary for this. You know, sometimes I was actually reading a tract from the Jehovah's Witnesses, and it was talking about the purpose of life, strangely enough. It never got around to actually stating what the purpose of life was. For all I know, they're kind of hiding it, hoping for you to pay them. It's one of those things where you kind of, it's kind of a teaser. It's supposed to draw you in. But what I figured out was I don't think they really have, you know, those guys talk about God has a purpose in life for you, but they won't tell you what it is. I'm sure they'd say, oh, it's different for each person. You go, why? Why would it be different for each person? Because apparently, according to them, they have this whole idea that, you know, people cease to exist after they die. Most people do. I guess whatever number, the 144,000, which is 12 times 12 times 1,000, or maybe 120 times 120, I don't know. You know, it's some interesting number. And that's okay. You can play with that all you want to. Although 12 is really big because that's how many, you know, tribes there were how many tribes of Israel there ended up being, and how many apostles Christ had was 12. The numerologists can just have a field day with that. I'm sure they have in the past. But I was trying to fit the whole idea of having non-player characters into reality. You know, why would God make a person that's not really a person, that's almost kind of a program person look-alike, that's supposed to, you know, serve some purpose given the game? Well, in Mormon parlance, it's really easy. God's game, and that's loose. God's thing that he's trying to accomplish here, his script, which he really doesn't have much of a script, I have to say. His plan is to bring his children back to him and to give them the opportunity to become like him. This is a testing time to see what if you impress God with what you've been able to do here on earth, and he'll give you more things in the future. The parable of the talents is all about God gives you certain things. He may give you five or two or one talent. You can make allegories however you want to. And ultimately, he deals out more talents given your ability to do good with what you were given. So, you know, the five guy gets five more, and so he has 10. The two guy gets two more, he gets 4. And then you've come up with the guy that was given 1, and he didn't do jack with it. He kind of putzed around with it, played video games all day, I guess, and didn't do anything, kept it in his pocket. And when the Lord asked for it back, that's all he got back was the 1. He said, hey, at least you could have done the minimum. You could have at least given it to some bank and gotten me at least back some interest. But you didn't, so I'm taking that away from you. I'm giving it to the guy that has 10, and he'll have 11. Whoa. And you go, and that's, you know, I don't know what lazy, poor analogies people say, this is what Christ meant. It's really obvious what he meant. What he meant was, when it comes down to it, because, you know, every time he takes an accounting, we don't have God taking accountings here on earth. It doesn't happen. Have you seen God do it? I haven't seen God come down and judge anybody at this point, which is what accounting is. It's judging how things went. That's going to come later. You know, it talks about resurrection, and then you have the judgment, right? God decides whether you go, you know, in Christian parlance, to heaven or hell. And you go, well, what's he going to base it on? And, you know, and it's sad to say that what I hear from most Christians is not much. You know, sometimes God says, well, God's going to send everybody to heaven because he just loves everybody. And you go, well, what was the point of being here? Why not just God takes you straight to the gates of heaven if everybody's going to get there? It's kind of stupid to put them all here. It's really easy to say that God is some kind of putz. Or he's some kind of guy who just kind of plays mind games with you, toys with you, and he says, oh, well, I think I'll treat you good in the end. Or maybe I won't, you know. Or kind of the, I'm sure I get it wrong, I don't want to offend anybody. It may be the Jehovah's Witness view that 144,000 get to go on and do interesting things, but by and large, everybody else just ceases to exist. And then they talk about God's purpose, and you go, well, what's God's purpose then? Oh, there's nothing to do with you. It's like, oh, wow. But see, it started me thinking. Starting to think about the non-player character. Autistic people really have tons in common with non-player characters. Everything they do is kind of programmed. If you interface with them, they talk stilted and funny. You know, they tend to have programmed responses to what you say. Right? Especially ones that seem to be either really autistic or whatever makes autism and a disability, they have more of that. And they, sorry. And those people really do talk in scripts. I can tell you, or I used to be able to tell you, Matt's now gotten a larger vocabulary over time because I think you see more movies. I used to be able to tell you which movie he was quoting when he was talking to you. Because that's what he'd do. He'd quote a movie. He's getting a lot better now. I think at some point he's gonna be able to communicate very well. It may be when he's in his 30s. It may be earlier, it may be later. Who knows? But, you know, he's getting a lot bigger capability, being able to speak his mind more and have things to talk about. But you can still pick up those pieces. It's almost like, you know, he has a parser in his head. A computerized parser. You know, that takes what you say and then he spits out what he thinks the proper response is. Now he's getting to the point to where it isn't just what the proper response is. It's what he's trying to say to you. Anyway, so for the whole non-player character concept. Maybe autistic Zeniths, Asperger's, blah, blah, blah people are just really sophisticated non-player characters. Now, I don't know what all the ramifications of that mean. When I started kind of pondering it out loud, my wife got really upset and said, no, 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 the world can't be that way, no. And I'm perfectly willing to say that it could be that way. Not saying that it is, just saying that it could be. You know, me, I may be something that's been put here to make something happen or be something that people can interface with. You know, that they come up to me, they say certain things to me, I say certain things back, and then, you know, the game goes on. You know, I give you some viable piece of knowledge. You know, that's kind of a really simplistic way of doing it. But, you know, and it seems to fit in. When you think about those people who have done great things, have been suspected to be on the autism spectrum, for instance, let's get some possibilities. Sir Isaac Newton, Albert Einstein, people like that. Bill Gates, for instance. It's really, if one were to put them into the whole scheme of being a non-player character, you can see them as being people who tend to have kind of weird half-lives, but, you know, where it's like, well, they don't go out, they don't party like normal people do, I guess. They don't have a good time because it's really not part of their nature. They just, you know, they're all about what they're supposed to be doing, you know, and we call that obsessional and try to drum it out of people or try to get them not to be that way. Oh, we don't want you to be obsessed. But you go, you know, that obsession led them to do the amazing things that they ultimately did. We wouldn't have the kind of stuff we have now. You know, a lot of people attribute the beginnings of, like, atomic theory, at least to a degree, to Albert Einstein. And if he hadn't have come up with some of the interesting things he had come up with, we might not have ever gotten there. The point to where you can have cheap power. Of course, we've all gotten weird about the fact that we don't feel like it's safe. And it's like, what? guys are doing unsafe things all the time. I don't know why you're getting weird about that. About this particular kind of unsafeness. Oh, it mutates people. I said, so? You guys are all mutants anyway. What's the problem? You don't like the particular mutation that's there? It doesn't look unsightly enough for you? Don't like the Toxic Avenger, for instance? Anyway. It's really easy to say, to see that these people may have been people that were dropped into a place and a time with a certain amount of capability, and it's often very vertical, you know. Well, they don't know much how to take care of themselves, you know, physically. They don't take showers often enough for us. But boy, let me tell you, did he know physics? Or was he able to conceptualize this thing and try to explain it to human beings so other people could take it up and keep using it? You know, and it can, and if you were to look at the scape of the world, and you were wanting to put this into some kind of a adventure game, if you were to put the life of Einstein in an adventure game, he'd fit pretty good. Because he was. He was all about what he was about. You know, he didn't have a wide range, you know, he didn't go out and, you know, well, I took care of the special theory of relativity, now I'm going to go out, I'm going to party till like it's 1999! Which you would think normal people would be all about, you know. Sometimes autistics and zeniths and people like that think that regular people are pretty shallow. And it's only in relation to us. For everybody else, they're quite normal, you know. Want to go to bars, you know, every time I go... Half the time you go to some profile of some person. Girls are really big into this, I found out. It's always about clubbing. They love going clubbing. There's whole industries up around what kind of clothes you wear when you go to the club. And you go and you drink and you dance, and it's called clubbing now. You know, it used to be called going and dancing. But now it's a whole different thing. Because it's the whole aura. But anyway, and yeah, you talk to autistic people and they kind of give you this look that says that's just the most asinine thing to do with your time. And that's because they're imbued with purpose, where normal people aren't. You need to almost put a cattle prod to them to try to get them to do anything besides just having a good time and living for their own personal pleasures or desires, you know. Zeniths, autistic, Asperger's, ADHD people often just get imbued with their sense of mission. I know I have, you know, and when I'm not about my mission, I'm catchy, you know. I get real snappy. Question is, I'm still trying to figure out what exactly my mission is. But, you know, what are you going to do? Anyway, so we have these non-player characters. Often they don't have children, or if they do have children, they don't have very many, and if they do have any children at all, they tend to be handicapped. You know, kind of what leads on from having these people is kind of maybe some ultimate cosmic balance that says, you know, you've got to have somebody with troubles to kind of take their place. I don't know. Anyway, ponder that. Ponder that as you go out and do things that there may be some non-player characters on your Earth. People that are here just to fulfill one or two reasons. Just like that old pirate on the pirate thing. He was only there to really give you two or three things and maybe to say a few statements that were going to help you. Clues. They're only there to give you some clues. Maybe there's people on this Earth that's their only purpose. And maybe that's what autistic people are. And to a degree, you know, part of the test for normal people who may have the possibility of going on to become like God if they, you know, utilize their five talents well and double them get more, and they get to go into the rest of the Lord, where the other guy gets sent down to hell. You know, maybe it's about, well, how did you treat those autistic people, those people that only seem like about quarter there? How do you treat them? That may be part of the criteria. There's so many people in this world that have never run into a genuinely damaged person and had to deal with them for any amount of time at all. You know, there's people who say, I've never met a disabled person. I stay away from them. That's why we used to put them into the institutions, so we didn't have to mess with them. There were certain people who were hired to handle them. But, you know, otherwise you could go on and live a happy life and all of your friends were just like you and, you know, stuff like that. And I think God is kind of throwing down some more non-player characters. Stir things up. See what will happen. See how regular players will treat non-player characters. Maybe. Now, I'm not saying this is true. I'm not saying this is right. I just think this is an interesting possibility. It seems to fit a lot of things. Ponder that. Feel free to give me feedback at autism@quix.us, the email address. Feel free to contact me and give me any feedback you like on whether you think these sorts of people, the Xenoi, just to give it a larger term that kind of encircles all these sorts of people that feel like they're aliens on this world, because you know what? They probably are. You know, how does somebody, you know, it probably comes up with the whole question, you know, because I don't know how philosophers, you know, dealt with the whole thing of, in a text adventure, how does that pirate feel after he's given you all that? What does he spend the rest of his day doing? And of course people would say, well, that's stupid. He doesn't do anything. He's just a computer-generated fantasy. He's fulfilled his role, you know, whether he lives or dies or anything actually happens to him is kind of pointless. He's done what he came to do. And you go, but wait a minute. Maybe autistic people are those people, are like that pirate in that adventure game. And, you know, they have to live. They have to breathe. The whole point was he put enough artificial intelligence, perhaps, into Zenith people to make it so they look like people, even though they may not be. They may not be people at all. Maybe they're comparable to animals or computers. You know, they really do get hooked on computers. You know, maybe that's because computers are kindred spirits. Maybe the first guys that made computers were just making artificial versions of themselves, which are just fleshy computers, you know. Sometimes I feel like a fleshy encyclopedia or a fleshy dictionary or a reference manual. And it's just a question of which reference manual am I? What branch of knowledge am I an encyclopedia of? And I find myself going more toward I don't know. I keep feeding myself full of knowledge and keep trying to pull things together and try to find some unifying thing. That's, I guess, the main thing that I kind of go for. But, you know, because we do, I do at least, I can't speak about we, I can only talk about me particularly, but I do, I feel like sometimes a fleshy encyclopedia. Just being able to make connections better. I always get frustrated with the internet because sometimes I just can't type things the way I want to. Like, I'm trying to figure out this esoteric little computer problem, and I typed in some things, seeing if other people had found the same thing. And when I brought it up, you know, it had totally misconstrued what I said because it was just doing a straight search on the words I came up with. Not with the phrase itself. That's when you need a fleshy encyclopedia, somebody like me, who can say, okay, I think I understand what you're trying to say. Here's what the database comes back with. This is what comes to mind. And then you start saying it, you know. And hopefully it's worthwhile to that person. You know, kind of what the role an old-time librarian used to play. Kind of being a think tank a little bit. Anyway, so, yeah. And it kind of fits into the whole thing of being a non-player character. It's almost like you're just here to fill some role. And so you kind of feel driven to it. Obsessive, in other words. Even though this society and this world thinks obsessiveness is a bad thing. And I've been the one saying, wait a minute, guys. Before you start saying this is a bad thing, consider the idea that it may be a good thing. It has its uses. You know, I find people who say, you know what, Jay, you're really being taken advantage of here. And you go, what? I don't see this being taken advantage of. Well, they're picking your brain. And you're not exacting payment enough, we think. You're not being, you know. And I said, you know, if Albert Einstein did it just for the money, and I don't think he really, you know, he was never rich. He was provided for, but he was never rich. I always considered him kind of the old-time scholar, which, you know, he would live somewhat in a cloistered type of environment. You know, it was kind of a whole other world. And it was just made for these people who said, you know, I don't care about getting rich or getting famous or anything like that. I just do what I do. The only payment that people need to give me is they need to give me food, clothing, and shelter adequate enough to, you know, so I can continue my work. And we've kind of gotten away from that, I think. In that we've all of a sudden started to say, well, what value does it have? We've almost been putting a price tag on everything now, to the point to where we've killed off a ton of innovation. I really think that we are entering an innovation-free zone. We've been drifting that way, and I think now we're just about there. Because you can't just innovate. You have to come up with a business plan for it. Stuff that really kind of goes past these people. You almost have to put yourself into a partnership. But you know that when you're dealing with business types, they're always trying to get one up on the other guy because that's just almost the nature of business. And it makes it so that, you know, you can't live. You can't eat. You know, I work for government because it gives me that kind of thing. I still have to do work that I don't think is really particularly well suited to me. You know. But God gave me this talent with computers. I use it because in this day and age, it'll keep me alive. It'll keep my family fed while I pursue the things I really think I should be about. You know. Kind of the medieval monastery thing. I've always wanted something along the lines of a monastery type of thing. I always thought that was my preferred place. But, you know, I can't do that in the modern world. I can't do that given the religious order I belong to. We don't do that kind of stuff. We're all about, you know, gotta go out and provide for yourself. Gotta go make money for yourself. Yada, yada, yada. And you're going, oh, God. So I have to worry about that. Of course, God's given me some compensating things that I can go out and fix computers and people are just grateful that I do that. Anyway, so. I'm about coming into my destination. I need to let this go. Ponder and think. about the whole concept of Zenith autistic Asperger's ADHD type folk being non-player characters in God's plan. That we are in places to accomplish things. Why God is stacking the deck at this particular time, when we start to see there's a whole bunch of autistic type people, there seems to be a huge proportion of Zenith. Why would he do that at this particular time? Is it because the end of this existence and the beginning of another existence for the earth is coming, and that we are instruments to kind of make that happen? I don't know. But I'm prepared to say, maybe I'm only a quarter of a person, because of the simple reason that a quarter of a person is all that's required to accomplish what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know if I will suddenly, you know, it comes back to the whole thing about being fixed. You know, are you going to be cured of this? And you go, well, no, it's what I'm here for. It's part of my life. You know, that culturalists tend to say. But then I started thinking about, well, then, what point is the culture thing? People probably shouldn't get too anal or get too obsessive about learning about autism, for instance, for the very reason that I don't know if that really accomplishes what we've been sent here to do. And I think we get really, really weird. We start having problems and we just get upset when we aren't able to do what we just really need to be doing. The whole idea of having kind of a commune where we can be autistic, for lack of a better term, it kind of takes on the whole view of looking kind of like a monastery. You know, you are about what you're supposed to be about, and amazing things flow. Now, the whole question is, can you make that thing pay enough so that everybody's okay? I don't know. I have to trust God that maybe it will. So it's an interesting idea. I'd like to bring it up, but first I will talk, you know, I'm going to do another episode about something else here that seems unrelated, then I'm going to try to tie them together, and we'll see how that goes. You're listening to episode number 711, Guy. I just skipped 200 episodes I've done. This is Jay Nemro. If you'd like to make a comment, please do. The email address is autism, AUTISM, at Quix, QUIX.US. Thanks for listening to Life Autistic. Have a great day.